rector of Tatepa, the parent company for the tea processing plant.
You cannot exploit and hope to win in the long term. We very strongly believe that you have to work with people. But without also the profit motive, you'll never succeed. So you must make money, you must run businesses commercially. I think the long-run development of smallholder operations is that you have to involve the smallholder and you have to keep that involvement going. It's something that a company like ours would set up and would then slowly sell that processing facility to the stakeholder.
Back in the tea fields of Rungwe, Issa Monyumba has a message for Western consumers. Their choice of tea for local farmers like Issa can make a very major difference.
Ndio. Mambo mengine yanaweza kumletea mtu chai uzuri kwa mfano huduma ya jamii kwa
mfano. He says that through tea we have fair trade whereby we get different help to different areas and projects. And through that, then, people will benefit. Through this, he has been able to educate his children. Also, he has been able to build a house. Say that I'm really grateful for this fair trade because it has greatly helped us and he's thankful to the people who started it.
Tuanzishia huo mfuko kutuweza kutusaidia.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Rupert Cook in Rungwe, Western Tanzania.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez.
And this is radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's time for Off the Wall. You may not know it, but this is the sound of a terrorist. Yes, they can sound just like normal singers of the 70s. Listen carefully for the hidden messages of Al-Qaeda.
Mine is the sunlight, mine is the morning, born of the one light, Eden saw play. Praise with elation, praise every morning, God's recreation of the new day. Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Praise for the singing, praise for the morning, praise for them springing fresh from the world.
And I must say, I guess I should have prefaced the program with a warning. But sometimes you just have to, you have to play something like that to make a point. I know people are sensitive about airing terrorist doctrines, beheadings, that kind of thing. And occasionally, though, people need to see it for themselves. Kind of, you know, shocks them into realization that it's all around us. Now, I know beheading pales in comparison to playing a Cat Stevens song on WUSB. And I don't know if that's ever been done before. I don't think that's ever been done before. I don't think this radio station has ever played Cat Stevens. How about that? Oh, no, we're not going to do it again. No, 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 no. Stop it. Stop it. We've made the point. Oh, boy. Yeah, but, you know, there's all kinds of things in there. I don't even know where to begin. Mine is the sunlight. The sunlight is yours? Is that what you're trying to say? Mine is the morning? Which morning do you mean? The one with the you or one without? And if it's the one with the you, what are they mourning for? The fact that you own the sunlight? You know, you could analyze this all night long. Born of the one light, Eden saw play. Eden saw play? What in God's name are you talking about, man? So, yeah, you know, that's why you can't let people like that into this country, because you don't know what they're going to say next. They're going to confuse people and have them saying all kinds of apocalyptic nonsense. And you know, light music and... Oh! I just can't handle it anymore. Let's just look at the facts as we know them. And leave the analyzing to the people in Washington, D.C. that know how to do such things. Yusuf Islam. He is the British singer once known as Cat Stevens. He returned to London on Thursday after being barred from entering the United States, saying he was totally shocked that American officials considered him a potential terrorist threat. Britain's Foreign Secretary Jack Straw formally criticized Washington's handling of the British pop singer. Now, keep in mind, this is interesting because Jack Straw, he's on our side. You know, he's one of the warmongers. Anyway, he criticized Washington's handling of Cat Stevens, who converted to Islam in the 1970s and has frequently toured the United States. Mr. Islam said he hoped that American officials would acknowledge that they had made a big mistake. Sounds like all he wants is an apology. Might be the last chance for the U.S. to get out of this cheap. The vague nature of the accusation by American intelligence and Homeland Security authorities clearly frustrated British officials, who said they had no information that Mr. Islam, who is a British citizen, is a threat to anyone or has any connection to terrorist groups. You gotta think, this guy lives in England, you know? One of the coalition of the willing. So how dangerous could he possibly be? Now, he made several statements, Cat Stevens, that is, in 1989. I'm going to keep calling him Cat Stevens. Only because it just sounds more ridiculous that way. How many names has he had? Obviously, he wasn't born as Cat Stevens, and now he's Yusuf Islam. I mean, you know, I think two names a lifetime is enough. Anyway, he made some statements in 1989 that made him appear to support the death sentence pronounced on the novelist Salman Rushdie by Ayatollah Khomeini. Mr. Islam later denied supporting the edict, and he has spoken out repeatedly against violence since the September 11th attacks, and he's donated some of his royalties to the victims of the attacks. Gosh, you know, we never heard about that here. I wonder why that was never reported. Writing in The Guardian in 2001, Mr. Islam said, "Sadly, the latest horror to hit the U.S. looks to have been caused by people of Middle Eastern origin, bearing Muslim names. Again, shame. This fuels more hatred for a religion and a people who have nothing to do with these events." A statement on Mr. Islam's website on Thursday said he has vehemently and consistently criticized terrorist acts and has always advocated peace through his songs and his extensive humanitarian relief work. The statement said he often travels to the United States, most recently 2 months ago, on a visit with his record company. Any suggestion, therefore, that he poses a security risk due to alleged connections with terrorist activities is totally denied, as it is simply wrong. Foreign Office officials said Mr. Straw in New York for the meeting of the United Nations General Assembly had raised the matter with Secretary of State Colin Powell, telling him that this action should not have been taken. Israel barred his entry in 2000, saying he had donated money to Hamas, the violent Palestinian group, during a visit in 1988. Mr. Islam protested that he had contributed to a home for invalids and a hospital. Same thing. Well, he says, at no time did I know consciously that I'm giving to a group called Hamas. See, that's the problem when you have an organization that blows people up and also builds hospitals and, you know, handicap ramps for people. It's going to get a little confusing. You know, there's going to be, you gotta diversify your holdings, you know, maybe split the company up a little bit. That's what AT&T did. They broke up into many different companies and there was no more confusion. I'm not saying AT&T was blowing people up. I'm just saying that there was a big company that did many different things. And sometimes it pays to break up the company so that you can focus better. So just a word of advice to the folks at Hamas. Might alleviate some of these problems. Mr. Straw was said to have registered Britain's concern about the underlying judgment that led American officials to single out a moderate Muslim like Mr. Islam. Other officials indicated that they considered the American decision an overreaction that would infuriate moderate Muslims in Britain and elsewhere who feel they have been unfairly tarred. The whole thing is totally ridiculous, said Cat Stevens to reporters, which in a televised, I guess, press conference of sorts. Half of me wants to smile, he said. Half of me wants to growl. asked if he felt victimized, he replied, absolutely. But you know, for God's sake, people make mistakes. I just hope they have made a big mistake. Being rather sporting there, I think. On Wednesday, Brian Doyle, spokesman for the Department of Homeland Security, said Mr. Islam had been deported because his name was on a no-fly list, and it was because of his activities that could potentially be linked to terrorism. It's awfully odd because, as mentioned, he's been to the country many times, and now all of a sudden he's on a no-fly list. The intelligence community has come into possession of additional information that further raises our concern, Mr. Doyle said, adding, it's a serious matter. But we're not going to tell you anything. Because that's what they do. They hurl these accusations out that they don't tell you anything, because if they told you, then that might compromise other investigations and put the security of the United States at risk. And you don't want to do that, do you? All right. Then you're on our side. And we're not going to say any more about this, but we're going to do it our way. That's the Bush policy. And you know what? It's working. It's working like a charm. Anyway, an official in London wondered why American officials did not act on the intelligence information by arresting Mr. Islam or sharing it with British authorities if they regarded him as a potential threat. And I guess there's no answer to that either. A Muslim Council official, Anas Altakriti, told Reuters the United States is shutting down its house, building walls around itself. It's crazy, Mr. Islam, or Cat Stevens, said to reporters. Everybody knows me for my charitable work, and now there have to be explanations. But I'm glad to be home. That's what's been going on there. What are your thoughts? You can call us up later on if you want. Or write to us, otw@2600.com. On that note, if you were listening to Free Speech Radio News earlier today, you might have heard this. Enemy combatant is leaving the country. Well, he's being expelled from the country. He's not saying, all right, I've had enough and I'm just walking out of here. You know, you can't do that. He's actually a U.S. citizen, someone who is born in this country, is being stripped of his citizenship, sent to another country. Now, granted, he did grow up in that country, but still, he is a U.S. citizen until now. And that's the conditions of his release. This guy was held for 3 years and not charged with anything. And this is the deal he's going to be accepting. The U.S.-born Saudi detainee at the center of a landmark terrorism case is expecting to leave the United States aboard a military plane for Saudi Arabia sometime today. Yasser Hamdi was designated by the U.S. government as an enemy combatant after he was captured in Afghanistan by the U.S.-allied Northern Alliance forces in December 2001. He was armed with an assault rifle and traveling with the military unit of the Taliban, the deposed regime that gave al-Qaeda safe harbor in Afghanistan. Hamdi had been scheduled to leave Sunday from the Charleston, South Carolina Naval Yard, but because of the hurricane and other problems, that flight was rescheduled for today. Now, he is being held in solitary confinement in the military brig in Charleston. Last week, the government and Hamdi's lawyer announced they had reached an agreement for his release from U.S. custody that would send him back to Saudi Arabia, where he grew up. He has to agree not to aid, assist, or in any way affiliate with the Taliban, or whatever remnants of the Taliban exist. There's more remnants of Hurricane Jean than the Taliban right now. Or any member of al-Qaeda or any other terrorist organization or terrorist so designated by the United States. It also includes a statement saying Hamdi agrees that he will not engage in, assist in, or commit any combatant activities or act in preparation thereof against the United States or its citizens or against of the United States or citizens of such allies. And if he was able to make it make it through that statement, I guess he's sane. Or insane, whatever. Hamdi is required to tell Saudi and U.S. embassy officials if he is solicited to engage in combatant activities. The agreement mandates that he has to renounce his U.S. citizenship and has to renounce terrorism and violent jihad. He was born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana in 1980. He's lived most of his life in Saudi Arabia and has dual citizenship. The agreement for his release requires that he agree to remain inside Saudi Arabia for 5 years, not travel to the United States for 10 years, and never to travel to Afghanistan, Iraq, Israel, Pakistan, Syria, the West Bank, or the Gaza Strip. I guess that says something about how stable those places are going to be in his lifetime. Never. He can never travel to these places. The agreement also said the United States agrees to make no request that Hamdi be detained by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia based on information as to Hamdi's conduct known to the United States as of the official date of the agreement. Now, he was the first detainee designated as an enemy combatant by the Bush administration, and he's been held, according to the reports I've been reading, in solitary confinement for the last 3 years. Now, go through that, and I'll bet you'll agree to almost any kind of deal that would allow you to get out of that situation, including renouncing your citizenship, including agreeing to not go to certain countries and to denounce certain things. A lot of people wouldn't do that, but I can't really fault anybody for actually doing it. But look at this. It's the same thing again. It's the same thing again. This person is taken into custody, and we never get an explanation as to why. We're just told that this is for the benefit of the United States. It's for our security. You don't want to question that. And to make things even better, by giving up this U.S. citizenship, this guy can never really challenge it. Imagine it happening to one of us. One of us U.S. citizens that doesn't have another country to run to. Imagine that. And then we get out of it somehow. Well, what are we going to do? We're going to talk about it. We're going to go to the media. We're going to complain. We're going to file lawsuits. This poor guy doesn't have that opportunity because he's being shunted off to Saudi Arabia, where he will stay for the rest of his life and keep quiet and not cause trouble. Otherwise, he would have spent the next 10 years in solitary confinement being tortured by whatever monsters we have working for us right now. This is the country that we are building right now, where things like this are acceptable. And, you know, I was listening to another broadcast. I'm not sure if it was television or radio, but one of the statements contained in it was referring to the enemy combatants. And there is that other guy, the dirty nuke guy, Padilla, I believe. The broadcast made reference to the other enemy combatant, and the way they phrased it, they said it is believed that there is just one more enemy combatant being held. And it took about a minute or two for that to hit me. And the fact that they would have to say it that way, it is believed that there is another enemy combatant, as if there could be many more, but we don't know because they won't tell us. We don't have the facts. They could be holding U.S. citizens indefinitely without charging them with a crime, in solitary confinement, being tortured, having private Englands of all sorts deciding your fate. And we don't know about it. Sorry, that's just the way it goes. And yet John Kerry doesn't mention any of this. Somehow none of this is going to come up. You have to wonder, you know, you have to wonder just what's wrong with this guy, you know? How can you not attack these kinds of policies? What the shredding that is going on to our rights, to the Constitution, to due process? How do you just sit back and allow it to happen? And you are guilty of allowing it to happen if you don't speak up about it. Especially if you're in a position of power. Which any politician really is. So this case, you know, regardless of what this person did, you know what, we're not going to find out what he did. So you might as well assume he did nothing. You know, the way I was brought up, if you don't prove a case, there is no case. And no case was proven here, no case was even presented here. A guy was simply grabbed, thrown into prison, held in solitary for 3 years, and now he's being sent to another country and we're not supposed to hear from him again. That, my friends, is not a case. Okay? That is a scandal. And if Cat Stevens is a terrorist, I want to know about it. I want to know what this guy is up to. I mean, you know, I grew up with this music. It's in my DNA.
My lady Dapanville.
I've tried to get it out, but I can't. Yeah, so, you know, it's something that is of great concern to many of us. This is not going to go away. It's only going to get worse. Do you see the situation in Iraq getting any better? It's not. It's getting so much worse by the day. I mean, you know, this is making terrorism in Israel pale by comparison. You know, they only have maybe one car bomb every 2 weeks. We have something like four a day now in Iraq. It's as predictable as the weather, which over there is pretty predictable. And, you know, of course, the Bush line is, I'm not going to apologize for getting rid of Saddam Hussein, and the Iraqis are better off without him, and the United States is better off without him. You know, I don't know if that's really true anymore. I think a lot of Iraqis are asking questions about just how well off they really are right now. You know, just how advantaged are they by having these car bombs blowing up all the time and having all kinds of different groups running around. You can say all you want about Saddam Hussein. He was a horrible dictator, but he did kind of keep all these groups from causing mayhem. And I think eventually there would have been something that would have led to a change of power. But it would have come from within. Yeah, we've unified the Iraqi people. We've unified them into hating us. I don't think that's really that good an idea. But that's where it stands right now. And it's not going to get any better anytime soon. A year from now, it's probably going to be even worse. Are we any better? Well, let's see. We're down about 1,100 people now in our country for a situation that's gotten much worse. Nearly 10,000 injured in one way or another. And almost 20,000 Iraqi citizens killed for one reason or another. Our reputation in the world demolished. And yet Bush is ahead. I don't understand it. I'll never understand it. All right. Let's take a look at what's going on today in the news, and then we've got a couple of other things to get to, and hopefully we'll be able to take some phone calls, too. Jean hasn't been a hurricane for days, but it's not giving up its stranglehold on East Coast weather. I'm trying to do two things here at once, so bear with me as I try to get our computer network to actually work. It's amazing how you have to troubleshoot everything in this studio at the same time. So it's raining outside. That's pretty much what's happening. The storm's remnants are now blamed for three deaths in Georgia. Heavy rain washed some caskets from the ground in a cemetery. That's always fun. Oh, great. So we're off the net. Is that the deal? We're off the net yet again? I know our stream is going out, but looks like I'm just going to restart this computer. I think that's the only way to get things working around here. Unbelievable. Because we have some pictures to show you today, but I can't show them to you if I can't access them myself. Ugh. Yeah, now you know what kind of computer we have. Okay, so yeah, it's raining a bit outside. Big deal. Lots of shaking in Central California today. A strong magnitude 6 earthquake shook an area midway between San Francisco and Los Angeles, cracking pipes, knocking pictures off the walls, and no injuries are reported. Okay, back to the important stuff. The second ad released by the Bush-Cheney campaign in 2 days says John Kerry and what it calls congressional liberals will put the security of the country at risk. The Kerry campaign says the ad uses the politics of fear to cover administration mistakes in Iraq. Here we go again. Here we go again with this vote for Kerry and put the security of the country at risk platform here. You know, for this reason alone, these guys should be booted out of office. Just for implying that if you vote for the wrong person, you're putting the country at risk. You know? The whole thing is ridiculous. Now, Ralph Nader has won one and lost one. New Mexico's Supreme Court has overturned a lower ruling and ordered that Nader show up on the presidential ballot as an independent, but the U.S. Supreme Court has rejected a last-ditch bid to get Nader on the ballot in Oregon. Okay, we're not on the network, so I'm going to ask the people that run the website to please take the pictures off for this week, since we can't get our act together here to get on the internet. So we'll have to postpone that till next week, I suppose, unless we can't get on the net next week either. Always something with this place. Starting in 2006, electronic voting machines in California must produce paper records of every ballot cast. A bill signed into law by Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger today requires that the records be put in lockboxes in case of recounts. How hard was that? You know, how hard was it to actually say, let's have paper records of electronic voting? But, you know, that doesn't really solve that much. I can think of many ways around this. You know, all you have to do is have your electronic voting paper record be wrong. How do you prove that it wasn't wrong? You know, without completely compromising the privacy of the voter. Now, let's say I vote for Ralph Nader for some godforsaken reason. All right, and I do that, and I want a record of it. Well, I can't get a record that I voted for somebody, because then I could use that to sell my vote to somebody. So all I know is that somewhere in a sealed vault, there's a paper record of my vote. But that paper record actually printed George W. Bush. Okay, so how do you ever prove that the paper record is the same as the electronic record? You can't. Not under that system. All right. Debates are coming up day after tomorrow. That's right. Day after tomorrow, Kerry and Bush will meet in a free-form debate. Hardly. All right, let's take a phone call. Good evening, you're on.
Hi, Eric.
Who's this?
Brother Bill.
Hey, brother, how you doing?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, how are you?
Just wanted to know that we share your frustrations with what you're talking about, both politically and in the studio.
Yeah, what's wrong with this place? Everything is broken. Nothing gets fixed.
But I just want
to... drive me crazy. You know, you can't play two records. You can't do a segue. Our radio station is based on a segue, and we only have one control here because the other one's been busted for weeks, and we can't do segues.
You know what's another thing that's amazing is that from my notice walking around the university, that place certainly isn't hurting for money. I mean, they got a brand new sack, they got a brand new Wang Center, they got a brand new football stadium.
But just to explain some of the phrases that you said there, SAC is the Student Activity Center, and the Wang Center, that's, I don't know how to describe that. Why don't you try it?
Oh, my God. Anyway.
You have to see it to believe it. Let's put it that way. The sculpture on the roof for the Wang Center is just simply... the words cannot describe it. But
it's a pagoda.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
They're building something in front of the Union, too. You know, where the bridge used to stand?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right.
They've got concrete. Maybe concrete is just erupting out of the ground on its own.
I don't know. When I was there, it was a big crater.
The end of a horror film or something like that. But what else is on your mind?
Anyway, I just wanted to suggest that in the conference room, it's possible that the router is unplugged.
Anything's possible, but you know what's impossible is for me to get up and go over there and check in the middle of a talk show.
Put on a 2-minute song, but I just wanted to let you know that sometimes if you check under the desk, it's unplugged, you plug it back in, and you're back on the internet.
Yeah.
If you can do it. But anyway, just wanted to let you
if
know.
If anybody
that.
Wants to run in and do that,
yeah.
That they'd be. But what I'm getting is, I'm not getting any name recognition whatsoever. Anything I go to, it doesn't resolve the name.
Seems like the router is off, perhaps.
The router could be off, or... Oh, you know what? It just started working.
Oh.
Brother Bill, you are amazing. I don't know how you did it.
I have the Fonz touch.
Now, I'm not sure if my command was received by... Oh, no, it hasn't been received because my photos are still here. Okay, we're going to go with it anyway.
Excellent.
We're going to go ahead with it, and there'll be a picture show tonight.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, brother.
Bye.
See ya. Brother Bill. You can hear Brother Bill, actually, on a lot of the old Brain Damages, which we're putting up. We've put up 1989, and the last year we're going to do is 1988. Brother Bill and Brother Nick followed Brain Damage. They did a show called Lobotomy. That's right, after Brain Damage comes Lobotomy, is what the phrase used to read. And you can hear their voices many times on those programs. Fixtures here at WUSB. Okay, well, let's first go through memorandums of understanding that were passed around for the debates that are coming up day after tomorrow. You know, I would love it if they just simply let the two in a room for an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever, and just have them have a conversation back and forth. What is wrong with that? Why can't we do that? You know, it's called conflict resolution, because obviously they have a conflict. Obviously these two don't agree on things. So maybe they ought to, you know, get in a room together and try to resolve their conflicts. What's so hard about that? Now, in the event they don't resolve their conflicts, then we can decide which one of them presented a better case. But, you know, we can't be trusted to do that, and we don't want to make things too harsh or unpleasant or direct. So there is this... 32-page memorandum floating around, which I got my hands on, telling everybody involved exactly how the debate is going to be run, down to the size of the podium. I'm just going to read you a few highlights, because obviously there's no time to read all of it. Each debate shall begin at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Okay, that's an easy one. I don't know why it has to be stipulated like that. The parties agree that they will not issue any challenges... for additional debates. What kind of stupid thing is that? They won't issue any challenges for additional debates. Why not? Why can't they issue a challenge if they want to? Why are they not allowed to do that? They will not appear at any other debate or adversarial forum with any other presidential or vice presidential candidate. So Kerry is not allowed to appear with Ralph Nader and debate him. He's not permitted to do that. And if Bush... And Kerry happened to find themselves both on the same car, the same subway train, they can't have an argument. Not allowed. They also can't accept any television or radio airtime offers that involve a debate format or otherwise involve the simultaneous appearance of more than one candidate. Okay, each debate shall last for 90 minutes. Can't have it lasting any longer than that because people's attention span simply will not tolerate it. For each debate, there shall be no opening statements, God forbid. Each candidate may, however, make a two-minute closing statement. No props, notes, charts, diagrams, or other writings or other tangible things may be brought into the debate by any candidate. Neither candidate may reference or cite any specific individual sitting in a debate audience at any time during a debate. My wife over here agrees with me on this. You can't do that. Not allowed. I don't know why. If a candidate references or cites any specific individuals in a debate audience, or if a candidate uses a prop, note, or other writing or other tangible thing during a debate, he will be disqualified from the election. No, it hasn't quite gone that far. The moderator must interrupt and explain that reference or citation to the specific individuals or the use of the prop, note, or other writing or thing, they really spent all night writing this, didn't they, violates the debate rules agreed to by that candidate. Notwithstanding subparagraph 5C, which I believe is the one we just read, the candidates may take notes during the debate on the size, color, and type of paper each prefers. You have carte blanche on this. You can use whatever kind of paper you want. You want to write on black paper? You're welcome to. What a free country this is. And also using the type of pen or pencil that each prefers. You know, if I was one of these people, I'd walk in with a 6-foot-tall pen. You know? Because I prefer that. Each candidate must submit to the staff of the commission prior to the debate all such paper and any pens or pencils. Okay, so that idea would have gone right out the window. And the staff of the commission will place such paper, pens, and pencils on the podium, table, or other structure to be used by the candidate in that debate. Good God Almighty. Neither film footage nor video footage nor any audio excerpts from the debates may be used publicly by either candidate's campaign through any means, including but not limited to radio, television, internet, or videotapes, whether broadcast or distributed in any other manner. Can you believe this? So if Bush says, you know, I don't understand any of this. I don't understand the question. I must be an incompetent idiot. I don't know what I'm doing. Kerry can't use that. If he says it during the debate, Kerry can't use that for his campaign. He's not allowed to use it. All right. The candidates may not ask each other direct questions, but may ask rhetorical questions. If anything sums up the American political process better than this, I have yet to hear it. The only question you can ask is one that has no answer. Come on already. What are they afraid of? You know, years ago, I saw a debate in Canada on Canadian television where the two candidates for prime minister were really going at it. You know, waving fingers in each other's faces and getting angry and interrupting each other. But you know what? You learn something about a person that way, because life is not a series of structured debates. Life is life. You know, why don't we see that? See how these guys hold up to that kind of thing. How do they talk in a real conversation? How do they deal with somebody who's an adversary? You know, one of the times where Clinton was at his best was when he called our radio station, not this one, the one in New York, WBAI. He called our radio station on Election Day 2000. I don't know if he knew what kind of radio station we were, and I'm sure he didn't know that Amy Goodman was going to pick up the phone, but she did, and she kept him online for about 20 minutes with really hard-hitting questions and putting him on the spot for a number of issues. And while, you know, I probably wouldn't agree with most anything he said, he defended himself well. He was getting angry. He was expressing himself. But it was him doing it, one-on-one. And that's the kind of thing we want to see, right? I mean, does anybody not want to see this? Anyway, let's continue with these restrictions because there's so many of them.
No questions shall be asked of a candidate by the moderator if less than 6 minutes remain in the scheduled time of the debate. The candidates shall not address each other with proposed pledges. Okay. For the September... Okay, there are certain rules for different debates. For the September 30th and October 13th debates, the candidates will appear at podiums. The September 30th and October 13th debates shall be governed by the rules set forth in Section 5 and the following additional rules, in case you thought you were getting away with something there. There shall be no audience participation in the September 30th and October 13th debates. Of course not. After the start of each debate, and in the event of and in each instance whereby an audience member attempts to participate in the debate by any means thereafter, the moderator shall instruct the audience to refrain from any participation in the debates as described in Section 9AVIII below. The moderator shall direct the first question to the candidate determined by the procedure set forth in paragraph 5G. The candidate receiving the question shall be entitled to give an opening response not to exceed 2 minutes, and thereafter the other candidate shall be permitted to comment on the question and or the first candidate's answer for up to 1.5 minutes. Thereafter, the moderator in his discretion may extend the discussion for a period of time not to exceed 60 minutes. No, 60 seconds. But the moderator shall begin each such discussion by calling upon the candidate who first received the question. To the extent that the moderator opens extended discussion, the moderator shall use best efforts to ensure that each candidate has a maximum of approximately 30 seconds to comment in the extended discussion period. During the extended discussion, no candidate may speak for more than 30 seconds. At no time during these debates shall either candidate move from their designated area behind their respective podiums. So Bush can't take a running jump at Kerry at any point, and Kerry can't take a swing at Bush or any of that kind of thing. You have to stay in your position. Now, we mentioned that there is no audience participation in the September 30th and October 13th debates. Well, guess what? The October 8th debate is going to be conducted in audience participation format. That debate shall be governed by these rules. There shall be no audience participation other than these described. An audience member may ask a question as permitted by this section at the start of the October 8th debate, and in the event of and in each instance whereby an audience member attempts to participate in the event in the debate by any means thereafter, the moderator shall instruct the audience to refrain from any participation. Audience members will actually be able to ask questions. Is this a miracle? Is this actually democracy in action, where you can ask a question of the candidate? Well, not quite. You see, prior to the start of the debate, audience members will be asked to submit their questions in writing to the moderator. The moderator shall approve and select all questions to be posed by the audience members to the candidates. The moderator shall ensure that the audience members pose to the candidates an equal number of questions on foreign policy and homeland security and economic and domestic policy. The moderator will eliminate any questions he deems inappropriate. And if any audience member poses a question or makes a statement that is in any material way different than the question the audience member earlier submitted, the moderator will cut off the questioner and advise the audience that such non-reviewed questions are not permitted. You know, I could go on with this, but it's the same basic idea. You know, they go into where the cameras are going to be. The cameras are going to be fixed in certain locations. They'll be limited to shots of the candidates or moderators, and in no case shall any television shots be taken of any member of the audience. From the time the first question is asked until the conclusion of the closing statements. Can you believe this? This is the most controlled setting I've ever heard of. All members of the debate audiences will be instructed by the moderator before the debate goes on the air, and by the moderator after the debate goes on the air, not to applaud, speak, or otherwise participate in the debate by any means other than by silent observation. What is the point? Except as provided by the agreed-upon rules of the October 8th town hall debate. So if you hear anybody clapping, you're going to hear the moderator instructing the audience to refrain from any such participation. And yeah, as we might have heard in the mass media, the podium shall measure 50 inches from the stage floor to the outside top of the podium facing the audience, and shall measure 48 inches from the stage floor. This is totally, totally insane here. Now, if the moderator doesn't do his job, the commission shall provide for an audible cue announcing the end of time for each of the candidates' responses, rebuttals, and rejoinder time periods to be used in the event the moderators fail to take action to enforce the strict time limits described in the agreement. The audible cue shall be clearly audible to both candidates, the debate audiences, and television viewers. Prior to the start of the debate, neither the moderator nor any other person shall engage in a warm-up session with the audience by engaging in a question or answer session or by delivering preliminary remarks. Can't have that either. And here's, finally, the weirdest part of this. Each candidate shall receive not fewer than 30 press passes for the media center during the debate, and more if mutually agreed upon by the campaigns. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought the media was the media. How come the candidates are the ones deciding who gets press passes? You know, I would imagine the press figures that out somehow. But no, the candidates are the ones who get the press passes, and they hand them out to whoever they want. Each candidate will be allowed to have an unlimited number of people in the media center upon the conclusion of the debate. That ought to be interesting. 10,000 people, let's cram them in there. The sponsor of the debates agrees that it shall not, prior to 2 days after the presidential inauguration of 2005, release publicly or to the media or otherwise make publicly available any survey research, including polls or focus group results or data, concerning the performance of the candidates in the debate or the preferences of the individuals surveyed for either candidate. It just seems meaningless to me, because we're all going to be asking those questions of ourselves. Okay, we have a slideshow tonight. For those of you who are interested in how this works, we've done this before. Well, basically, you go to our webpage, www.2600.com/offthewall, and look for this particular show, which you're listening to now. If you're listening on the internet, you don't have to do that because you've already opened the page. You should see pictures for this week's show. All right, and what we're going to do is have an audio cue, and I'm not prepared again. I'm not prepared again. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a, I guess we'll have Cat Stevens be the audio cue. How's that sound? So whenever you hear a sound, well, let's see, how should we do this? A sound like this. Okay. And it comes from a Cat Stevens song of some sort. That is your cue to move to the next picture. All right, so go to the first picture now, all right? And the audio cue will just be a practice one.
Wait.
Okay. All right, I don't know how distracting that's going to be. And you'll see we have a picture here of one of the weird things that happened outside the Republican convention. Now, these are pictures that took place before the events of August 31st. This is a couple of days before the actual convention began, maybe almost a week before the convention began, where they were doing all kinds of strange things to the road. They did this on all four corners of the garden. They dug up a square in the road, and they repaved it over. This close-up look at it, you can see that the pavement is elevated significantly and surrounded by gates. Now, I'm told that later on, I wasn't able to get close to the actual location, and of course I was imprisoned for the last part of the convention, so I wasn't able to check it out myself, but I was told that these are the locations for those devices, you know, the metallic devices that rise up out of the ground and prevent a vehicle from moving forward. Apparently all vehicles had to go through those. I'm not quite sure how they worked, or if they're still there. I don't think they are, and I think they did something weird because when I walked by there the other day, the ground was not nearly as elevated. I don't know how they got the whole ground to be lowered like that, but they did it somehow. Okay, on to a picture here of Madison Square Garden. That's what it looked like, the belly of the beast there. Republican National Convention banner of sorts. You know, I asked if I could have that when they were finished with it, but I never got an answer. I can think of a few places to hang that. That's what the garden looked like on the outside. You can see on the bottom part of the screen the bridge that went across 8th Avenue from the post office to the garden, because they didn't want people, members of the press, crossing the street. And, of course, members of the press were in the Farley Building, which is the post office, and they used that bridge to get back and forth from the garden. Okay. There we go. Thank you. And that's a sign that's on every telephone pole in the area. No stopping anytime. August 28th through September 3rd, 24 hours a day. Basically, clear out of this part of town. We don't want you here. This is a picture of an armed forces vehicle of some sort owned by the NYPD. I figured I'd grab a shot of this because you don't see it out very often. It's completely black. And it's just NYPD, Emergency Service Unit. They have all kinds of crazy vehicles out there just waiting to be used. They have a tank someplace. I'm not quite sure what this is used for, but it's very secure. You'd feel very safe inside this this vehicle.
To know.
Again, if anybody just tuning in, you must think we're crazy, but we're using Cat Stevens as audio cue to move to the next slide. And this slide was what I saw at the beginning of the August 29th march. That's the one with 500,000 people marching through the streets of New York. This was something that was on one of the side streets, and it was so ridiculous, it just made me laugh, and I had to take a picture of it. It was actually right outside the police station. The police put this up. It's on a truck, and they drove it around, one of those mobile ads. You, emphasis on you are standing in the number one terrorist target in America. You are only safe because of New York City police officers and firefighters. Dial 311 now, Bloomberg, to pay the finest and bravest who are protecting you a fair wage. Oh, I think it's Ask Bloomberg. I think the ask was cut off. Yeah, or demand or something like that. Now, you know, I'm not one to say that the police don't deserve an adequate wage, but to say that you are only safe because of the actions of the police and fire department is insane. It is completely insane. The cops get all the credit for there not being any violence. How about the people being peaceful? 500,000 people all together being completely peaceful. They deserve some credit too. You know, and this fear-mongering. You are standing in the number one terrorist target in America. It's shameful. It really is. And here we see some armed people standing on top the Southgate Hotel on 8th Avenue. Block away from the convention. And there's a closer look at them, and they don't look very happy. They don't like being photographed at all. But there are people like that all over the place. There's a fat guy who worked for the police department taking pictures of the demonstrators. You see he has a big telephoto lens there. He's standing right outside the garden. There are some people, some intelligence guys, that are standing also outside the garden, watching as everybody walk by. Nothing but cops standing behind the barricades there. And you know I had to go in for a close-up there. Yeah, I gotta tell you, this is so distracting. I'm gonna revert back to the dial tone. All right, how's that? Yeah, this will be our new change the slide command. How's that? Okay, much better. I just can't deal with Cat Stevens anymore. Okay, so we're looking now at the close-up of, I guess, Secret Service guys or some kind of intelligence guys. Who knows? And the most intelligent of all, of course, are the canine unit. We had this guy sitting at the garden by one of those barrier things. And then walking around near him, this dog looks mean. He really does. He looks like he can get very nasty on a single-syllable command. And this dog was also there. There's a group of three dogs, and they all had their assigned tasks to perform. And this is a look down 8th Avenue right outside the garden. You can see there's a guy there taking pictures of the cops, and the cops staring straight ahead at him while everybody else was kind of walking around. And, you know, I've heard it said, and I believe it's true, that many, many people have said there was no violence on behalf of the cops, like in 1968, you know, where the cops were beating people mercilessly. Now, there was violence. There was some violence. I witnessed some of it myself. But nothing on that level. And I think a large amount of that can be attributed to the fact that everybody had cameras. Everybody was capturing everything. You had to be on your best behavior. This woman was walking around with a big shell blowing through it and making a noise. She was also standing on stilts. It was kind of fun, but it got annoying pretty quickly. And as you can see, the huge Fox News Channel banner in the background, which everybody booed and hissed at as they passed by. And they also booed and hissed at this thing, the telescreen outside Macy's, which was broadcasting, yes, the Fox News Channel. You can't write the scripts for these things. This is where you were turned onto 34th Street. You can see 8th Avenue is barricaded. And if you look behind those cops standing there, let's just take a closer look there. Look at this meathead. He thinks I'm taking a picture of him. No, I'm taking a picture of the vehicle behind you. You probably don't even know what it is. Take a closer look. That is the sound weapon that everybody was talking about. That thing can broadcast at 150 decibels and deafen an entire crowd. It was used in Iraq, brought back to New York to be used on a civilian population here in this country to immobilize them if the need arose. And that's a much closer look at it, along with the two guys apparently running it. And our final picture is that of one of the many, many stickers that were affixed to payphones. No, I didn't do it. I had nothing to do with this one. Throughout the city, no to the Republicans on a payphone there. Well, we're out of time. Sorry, no phone calls this week. We'll see you next week. Good night. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. Succeed at last. Look here. Persecution you must bear. Win and lose, you've got to get your share. Got your mind set on a dream. You can get it, no harder than seem now. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. Succeed at last. I know it. Listen. Rome was not built in a day. Opposition will come your way. But the hotter the battle you see, it's the sweeter the victory. Now you can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. Try and try, you'll succeed at last. Succeed at last.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into. Thank you.